How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Just because they have dry mouth, I think patients see it more as like it's an inconvenience or it's a discomfort. They don't realize that they're really high risk because they're not producing enough saliva. They don't correlate that makes them a really high risk dental patient. So it really falls on us to have that conversation with them. Our job when we're recommending products to patients is to educate them on what to expect. We have to give them appropriate expectations. Or does it matter what the product is, if they use it once and think that should have lasted them all day long, they're going to tell you that didn't work for me. You have to set the expectation. If you have a patient, especially a female that sits down in your chair and reports that they have multiple sclerosis or RA or lupus, I would talk to them about dry mouth. Do you experience it? Because we know those are the primary autoimmune conditions that Sjogren's is a secondary condition too. So it kind of starts to have that conversation to say, you should keep it on your radar. And then just educate them that they should keep an eye on that.
Yeah, this is a tale. A tale, oh yeah. A tale of two hygienists. So there might be only one bringing the best of dental knowledge. And we do it all with ease. We cover oral health and screening and preventing gum disease. We're gonna do a lot of learning and have a little bit of fun working at the dentist. A tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode number 342. My name is Andrew. I am your host. We are recording live from RDH Under One Roof. I told you last week that, you know, we didn't really have anything planned for today's episode, but, you know, I think we have, 15 or 20 episodes planned, and this particular episode you're about ready to hear is Brooke Crouch, who, you know, a phenomenal human being. But I'm joined today as a co-host for not only the episode, the interview, but also for the intro by Erica Flateau, like plateau with an F. Actually, I don't know if that's if I said I probably put too much emphasis on the F or whatever. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here with you, Andrew. Thank you so much for allowing me to kind of co-host and get
kind of. You did great, buddy.
Get a little taste of what you do.
No, you'll hear her again on a future episode because we've done two together already, and I'm really amazed by your line of questions. I'm like, you know, I should have asked that question. It's not even on my radar.
Oh, well, that's why we brilliant. Well, thank you. We compliment each other.
Yeah. And also, okay, this is your normal voice right there. When you ask questions later on, your voice does change. And I appreciate it that you're trying to be like host like voice. It's pretty cool.
I have my
there it is.
Radio voice.
That's the one. So no, but it's super fun having a co-host on here. I really appreciate you doing this. Can I also say though, this is networking. The reason why we're even like we know each other, mm-hmm. networking to exact like
at its best.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you want to tell the story about how we connected?
Well, I'm extremely interested in learning more about doing something outside of my clinical setting that I've just become, of course, very practiced at, and I have a lot of information to share, and I don't really know exactly where that path is going to take me, but I have been extremely interested in the idea of podcasting, and Andrew is a friend of mine, and she and I met when I was sterilizing instruments and putting the golf clubs in the doctor's trunk. And she was the hygienist, and I looked up to her. And actually, I looked at her and thought she was just sitting there all day moving those instruments around, and it wasn't very hard work at all.
Yeah.
And I was doing all the hard work. And no, she was a great friend, and we've remained friends all these years. And I've been practicing 20 years, so you can see how long that's been. And she and Andrew have been doing some board examining up in Washington State together. And my name came up, and she thought, you know, Eric would really love to come down and see what you do and follow you around and maybe, you know, learn a thing or two about life outside of the dental hygiene chair. And I had no idea that I was going to get invited to co-host. So that's been
really
fun.
Well, I mean, I would love to say this is the whole plan. Like, I secretly had a great plan for you, but yeah. This is, you know, for you and then also people that are listening, you know, we're at RDH Under One Roof, one of the best networking conferences that, that exists. And things just happen when you're just around. Like, you can't really plan these things.
Right.
So this morning we happened to run into Jackie Sanders, right? Like,
and she's
the
just
Jackie Sanders.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So sweet. I had so much fun with her in the 2 minutes I spent with her.
Yeah.
But I would love to get into working with dental hygiene teams specifically. And I'm here just to serve and see what I can learn and who I can meet. I'm not really here with any sort of agenda. It was really interesting. I just bought a plane ticket and came down. And in the couple hours that I've already spent, I've made some fast friends.
Yeah.
And some people that are doing some really amazing things. And that is the world that I'm excited to get to try out.
I love it. And you took the red eye. So you're like on almost no sleep, and you are, like I said earlier, like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, like just like loving this experience. So
yeah.
These are the type of people I like to be around, people who just love life, who loves like the profession like you do. So anyway, so if any of you listeners are out there, like you, I'm want to engage with Erica, or, you know, you want to, you know, work together, or even if you are like a, you know, a dental company or something like that, if someone want to reach out to you, how would they find you?
Well, they can go to my email, which is Erica, E-R-I-K-A, X-N-E-K-S-U-N-D @gmail.com. And currently I have a digital business card, digital QR code. I'm working on my website. I'm being available electronically, but I'm working with someone because I'm just in the infancy of this. But I would be happy to speak to anyone about being interested in me working with their team, specifically the dental hygiene team. So many coaches come in and work with the practice as a whole, and I really feel as though I've developed some methods and an approach that's different with working with patients, and it's relational based. I think it's revolutionary, and if anybody would like to reach out to me and enjoys my personality, I think that doctors would be pleased to have me work with their team.
Okay, so, you know, sorry for this mini interview, like on an intro, but I'm so happy that you're here. I think, you know, this episode is going to be really good. I really enjoyed it. Brooke is amazing. We're going to talk about a little bit about Sjogren's, dry mouth. There's some really good products and protocol that you guys are going to hear about. Don't forget that next week we're also doing the part two of the leadership with Josie Sewell and Sarah Thiel. So make sure that you guys are there for that. It is the final of the two-part series. As always, make sure you guys are subscribing. Tell your friends. And I think that's it for us. So here is the interview.
A tale of two hygienists.
Hey, friends. Quick pause in the show to remind you about the CE offered for several of our episodes. All you have to do is click into the show notes and follow the link to the CE Zoom website. Answer a few of those questions about the episode correctly, and you'll be rewarded the appropriate amount of CEUs. This wouldn't be possible without a partnership with our friends at TempStars. TempStars is more than just a temp and a placement service. They are clinician-led and education-focused and strive to perfectly match individuals and dental offices. Learn more about TempStars.com or go back and listen to some of their tip episodes. They are absolutely worth the listen. And now, back to the show.
So, listeners, we're actually going to talk today, I think we're going to talk today about kind of just xerostomia, dry mouth. Brooke, I think you'd probably be, I mean, who else is really, I don't, not that you probably want to tell who your competition is, but like, you're probably the most expert in this that I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about
a lot of people talk about dry mouth and different things. I think it just sets me apart in a different way because I have Sjogren's. Mm. So usually I'm bringing my patient perspective just as much as I am my professional and clinical perspective, but I'd bring a patient perspective as well.
For those of us who have forgotten from school what Sjogren's was, do you mind giving us a rundown? Also, how to spell it. Because that's always something.
How to say.
Is there an apostrophe in there or a dash? Or
that is right.
A hyphen or something?
That is right. So it's Sjogren apostrophe S. And it's Sjogren's. You guys would be surprised. Maybe people can't pronounce it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is an autoimmune disorder. So it attacks any of your moisture producing glands. So, you know, anything like that. So dry mouth, dry eye. It also can even cause like drying of your like respiratory. Mm. So you also like a lot of acid reflux, things like that, just because of the lack of any kind of moisture there. Mm. So it's much more than like just dry eye or dry mouth. And of course, with being an autoimmune disorder, you're at a higher risk for other autoimmune disorders. So most people that get diagnosed with Sjogren's, it's either primary or secondary. It's not usually primary. It's usually secondary to something else. But for me, it's primary. So we think. I mean, we did a bazillion labs and a thousand tests after I was diagnosed. But it's primary, and primary Sjogren's is more destructive. So it's a lot. You have to see a rheumatologist every 6 months. You're at a higher risk for lymphoma. So they're constantly running labs to check for that. Medication options are just kind of geared at slowing the progression. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're high-powered medications, you know, immunosuppressants, and not ideal. So that's Sjogren's.
Now, if you don't have to answer this if you don't feel comfortable doing it, but, mm-hmm. like, you know, to what extent are you worried, like, on a day-to-day basis? Of, like, what are things do you have to do to manage the symptoms?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. So also, it's kind of like if you have any other kind of medical conditions, right? So if you have allergies, your Sjogren's is much worse because you deal with allergies, so which I have like year-round allergies. So it's definitely a daily management. And then constantly, it's kind of one of those things where it's like after you're diagnosed, you see the appropriate specialist. They'll tell you, like, because Sjogren's is still kind of, it's not, I wouldn't say it's greatly understood. So it kind of becomes this like, well, we've got to stay on the lookout for other, you know, medical conditions like RA. So rheumatoid arthritis is a very common one. Lupus is another one. So they're always kind of like waiting to see, you know, if anything else presents itself to be a secondary condition. So it's definitely something I think about every time I get a little ache and pain that's kind of consistent. I'm like, is it age or is there a problem? So yeah, it's definitely something that stays on my radar.
And why does someone have primary and why do they have secondary? Have they figured out why this happens to some people, not others?
I think it's just the autoimmune cascade. You know, usually once you're diagnosed with one autoimmune disorder, you're like four times more likely to be diagnosed with a second. So most people are usually diagnosed with something like lupus or multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis. And then Sjogren's will sometimes be like a secondary to that, like after years of, you know, of the other condition. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because my Sjogren's was diagnosed by my endocrinologist. So it wasn't even like my primary care. I mean, I had been saying for years that I had dry eye, but I wore contacts. And I feel like me telling my eye doctor that I had dry eye is like our patients telling us they have dry mouth. It's something we hear all the time. Mm-hmm. We're just like, oh, you do take medications.
Right.
We don't really know. I mean, that's exactly what happened. But I get that, you know, your eye doctor, just like our patients see us like once every 6 months or once a year. It's a very common complaint they hear. So they never thought we should look into this further. Mm-hmm. And it was actually my endocrinologist that was like, I think we should test you for Sjogren's. And I could not believe when it came back positive. And I think he couldn't believe it either. But I was thankful that you kind of listened to that complaint and explored it, because I was diagnosed pretty early. Didn't have a lot of dry mouth symptoms at the time. A lot of people go years without being diagnosed. Mm.
Is it true you have to lose more than 50% of your saliva before you notice it?
That's probably accurate. I'm not 100% sure about that percentage, but that is probably accurate. Because, you know, even when we think about dry mouth, we think about our patients.
Yeah.
The percentage of dry mouth is so crazy. It ranges so, it's like 0.8, the ADA reported it was like 0.8 all the way up to almost 65% of patients. And that wide range is because it's subjective. So we're waiting for our patients to tell us that they deal with it. And exactly. Like, what if they don't tell us until they've lost 50% of their saliva?
And your mirror is sticking and you're going, exactly. Well, you don't notice this? And
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I temped some last summer. And, of course, dry mouth is, like, on my radar. So every time I'd see a patient, like, do you deal with dry mouth? You know, to have that conversation.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how can I help you? And I would have my mirror stuck to a patient's cheek. And you ask them.
Yeah.
Do you deal with dry mouth? No. And it's like, how, what?
Yeah. So I wonder.
You might, you know? So it's like, well, no wonder the data is so, well, it's such a wide range because we're waiting on patients to complain about it. And they don't realize that just because they have dry mouth, I think patients see it more as like, it's an inconvenience or it's a discomfort. They don't realize that they're really high risk because they're not producing enough saliva. They don't correlate that makes them a really high risk dental patient. Yeah. So it really falls on us to have that conversation with them.
Is there a classification? Sorry, I might have missed this. Is there a classification for like an objective measurement of dry mouth?
So you can do like, you can do, it's a procedure like in office where you can stimulate saliva and see how much flow a patient gets. There's different things you can do to see like truly what someone's salivary flow is. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone that's doing that in their offices. I think they kind of just go by patients to report, or you notice it on the medical history, you know, something triggers you to think that they could deal with it. But then pH testing, which is something that we're hearing a lot about, salivary diagnostics, pH testing, because that's the thing. You have a patient that's in your chair, even me, your hands are in my mouth. I'm probably going to have a decent salivary flow at that time,
sure.
But doesn't mean I have quality saliva. You know, if I actually tested my saliva, my pH is like 5 most of the time, and I have like no buffering capacity. So, you know, I don't think that we're doing a lot to really test that.
Do you think that if you move to Florida with the humidity, things would just be better?
I mean, I'm hoping. We'll test it out this weekend. We'll see.
I think that you should. I think that'd be actually be very fascinating to know. It's like, oh, my eyes are just like less dry. I mean, in this air conditioning is probably not the best. But
I know.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
I know. Well, you know, I was here in Florida for about a month ago for almost a week.
And where were you? You were really close to me. And you didn't even say hi. Yeah, I remember that. Feelings aren't hurt, though, buddy. Don't worry about it.
I know. But I mean, I didn't really pay attention to, like, my salivary flow. But I swear to you, like, I feel better when I do have a little bit of, like, warmth and humidity because I do get a lot of, like, joint pain. I don't know how that correlates to Sjogren's, but it is a very common complaint is, like, joint pain. And yeah, I feel like I felt better when I'm in warmer weather. So sign me up.
Do you think though that warmer weather climates might mask that too for other people?
It could.
Yeah, I mean, there might be a higher incidence rate if we were freezing in
absolutely.
Florida.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very well could be. And then I know some people that have autoimmune disorders and they're actually worse with the humidity. So that's the thing about autoimmune things. Everybody's so different.
Yeah.
Everybody that has Sjogren's has different experience. Everyone that has, you know, autoimmune things, everyone's so different. So it makes it really hard to like treat. And you're really just treating symptoms.
Do you find that there's more diagnosis in like an older population or a younger population? Like, I mean, I would imagine that people that are kind of older are seeing their doctor a little more regularly.
Right.
So I might get diagnosed quicker, but.
But then I also think sometimes your older patients that some of their complaints could be chalked up to age. And so maybe it's not listened to as well.
I'm just getting older. That's fine. That's normal.
Oh, right? that knee that you can't walk. It's just age.
You can tell the weather by your knee.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah. And then I am finding, especially when I was temping and then just talking to hygienists in private practices most days, Sjogren's patients are getting younger and younger. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was 33 when I was diagnosed and I hear that very frequently. And that's actually, I mean, it's good because you identify that. It's bad because you also are so young. Your risk of having other problems is much greater because you're younger. And with autoimmune stuff, you just can't control it. You can be as healthy as you want, but autoimmune things are just really hard to control. You can't.
Yeah. Gosh, dang it.
Well, now identifying perio as autoimmune disorder.
Right.
So, and finally recognizing it that way. So I'm thinking dry saliva, Sjogren's, perio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing with like dry mouth too, is that when I got my diagnosis, of course, I'm a hygienist. So I'm like, okay, we are going to get on this, like anything and everything. And what I found personally, I was a hygienist for like, I'd been practicing probably 8 years when I was diagnosed. I didn't know what to even do for myself. I mean, I didn't really know what the best solution was going to be for me. It's taken me years to kind of figure out what works for me, how, you know, I can stay on top of prevention. Every time I go to the dentist every 6 months, I'm like on pins and needles because we know. I mean, we know Sjogren's patients are very hard to treat, rampant decay. And so, yeah, it's kind of crazy to have to be a hygienist that's battling that.
Gosh, that's probably more like anxiety driven than for me.
Because we know.
Yes,
like, oh my
it
gosh,
is.
It's coming. When is that fucking going to drop?
Exactly. And every time, I'm sure I drive my dental office crazy because I'll see like one area. I'm like, that looks like it's trying to demineralize. Do you see that? Do you see right there? They're like, it's fine. I'm like, but are you sure? Because I feel like we should be doing something about
Let's get the last radiographs and just compare.
I need to come see you every 3 months.
But you're going to have an altered response to bacteria. And so it's probably a good idea anyway to go more often.
Yeah. I was telling an office, I was doing a lunch and learn for an office the other day. And I'll tell offices that I have Sjogren's and try to talk through like any dry mouth questions they might have. And they're like, well, what do you do? And I started telling them, they were like, wow, you're really on top of it. And I'm like, well, because you have to be. I mean, it's prevention. Like, it's all prevention. And every time I go to the dentist, I've never had a cavity ever. And I've still stayed that way. But I'm just like, I have to do all those things or I'm going to be, you know, I get emails from patients across the country with Sjogren's that just ask me, like, they're losing teeth, they're discouraged, and they don't know what to do. And so it's, you know, I can send them all my list. And try to help them that way, but we got to get more on board.
It can be overwhelming, that list, though. I mean, if you go from like zero to all of these things you have to be doing.
Very overwhelming. And patients that have Sjogren's, especially ones that email me, they have lost teeth and they have dealt with recurrent decay and they've had failed implants and they've had, you know, everything you can imagine go wrong because of their Sjogren's, because their saliva quality and their dry mouth. So they're defeated, you know, they're not exactly, I don't know, just a little bit, they're just a little pessimistic on what works and what's going to help them. And some people just kind of accept that they're going to lose their teeth. They think that that's just the progression of Sjogren's. It doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the caries risk of a patient with Sjogren's should already be high, like automatically? So does that mean, I mean, we kind of touched on this a minute ago, but like, is this a 3-month radiograph situation for incipient decay? Like, what, how often would you advocate if you could?
Yeah.
Right. Cause Alera, as low as reasonably achievable, but right. We're trying to fight this incipient turning into something big.
Exactly. So I think, yeah, that automatically puts you at high risk. And I think you have to look at that patient's past history as well. So like me, I've never had a cavity. I don't have any watches. So once a year radiographs is okay with me right now. Mm-hmm. If it was a patient that had, you know, before their diagnosis, we were seeing a lot of decay. We were seeing a lot of incipient decay. Yeah. I mean, I think giving them the option to do radiographs more frequently and educating them on why you want to do that. Absolutely. I think if we've got them on the appropriate preventive, you know, regimen, we might not need to do that, but it's just about having that good regimen, you know, offering them a fluoride varnish treatment. I give myself a fluoride varnish treatment every 3 months because I'm high risk. So I think there's other interventions we can do on a more frequent basis, getting a cleaning every 3 months, you know, and maybe you could stay on that once a year radiograph.
Can I ask you about fluoride varnish in dry mouth? I believe in fluoride treatments. I do them for all my patients, but there's talk out there about if there's not enough saliva and you are doing fluoride as opposed to like an MI paste or something, that you can be actually pulling minerals from the enamel as opposed to finding them in the saliva because it's not there.
Right.
So any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you're definitely right. And someone that's got poor quality saliva, the minerals are not going to be there. And I do think depending on your product, if you're using too many things, you could be, you know, diminishing the effect of certain things. But I think a fluoride varnish treatment, even if they do have low salivary flow, even if they have low quality saliva, still doing that, you're still going to get the uptake of the fluoride into the enamel. So, you know, we're kind of looking for that fluoride uptake. So I don't see where that wouldn't be beneficial, even if you are low salivary flow. And then like for me, like I said, I use a whole host of different things.
Can we go into those?
Yeah.
I mean, can you just like start listing your regimen?
Yeah. So the one major thing I have found was using my water pick. So that's not really a product, but I never thought about it, but with low salivary flow, you are not clearing food debris. And I'm like, oh, sure. You know, I'd do great. No, I don't. And so I'll brush and I floss and I'll use that water pick and I'm shocked at how much still comes out. So a water pick I feel like is essential. Patients with Sjogren's can get like flares, almost like if you think of, I mean, any kind of disorder, you can get like a flare. You get that with Sjogren's too. And sometimes when that happens, I'll get almost like a mucositis. My mouth will be so painful. And so my water pick is like my lifesaver when that happens. So definitely a water pick. And then, of course, I use a 5,000 parts per million toothpaste at home, morning and night. That's definitely something I'm doing at home. And then, of course, I mentioned I do a fluoride varnish every 3 months. And then I also am using Xylemelts. I use Xylemelts. They're great because they're self-adhering discs, so I can put that in. I use those at night. I tend to not use those as much during the day, but I'm using those at night mostly. I use our Elevates.
Go into that a little bit more before we go into Elevate stuff. Like, so it's a disc that you stick to the roof of your mouth?
Yes. So it's got like one side's like a self-adhering disc. So you put it on the, well, I put mine in the roof of my mouth. The package says to put it on like the buccal mucosa. I don't like it because it rubs against my cheek too much that way.
Yeah.
So I like to put it in the roof of my mouth. But then of course, if I have it there and I'm speaking during the day, not ideal either. So that's why I mostly use it at night. And then I just do different things throughout the day if I need it. And then it just kind of slow releases xylitol throughout the night. And then I'll use our Elevate All Day Spray. I keep that with me all the time. So it's got a high xylitol content. It's got like a mucoadhesive gel, so it's a thicker spray, so it lasts longer. And then I chew gum on a regular basis that's got xylitol in it. It just depends. Like I tend to find like use a gum that I can find over the counter. So Icebreakers is one that lasts a long time. It's got xylitol, sugar-free. I keep that with me pretty much all the time.
How's your jaw joint?
It's actually pretty good, okay, shockingly good. Enough. Yeah.
Are you a chewer good. Though, or do you just put it in your mouth? And
I chew it. I chew it for like 5 minutes or so, and then I kind of just leave it until it dries out. Which Icebreakers does tend to last longer for that. I use clear nasal spray too, because that's got that xylitol nasal spray. You're with Sjogren's, everything is dry, so your nasal passages, your sinuses. So I use clear nasal spray. What else am I doing on a regular basis? That's probably the majority of what I'm using on a regular basis. But every time with like products, when I'm talking to different patients about it, it's, you have to have like varying modalities. You got to have different ways of delivering that relief and that product. I love a spray because I can use it throughout the day. I can keep it with me. I also like my Xylemelts because they'll stick in and I can keep them in at night. My gum, you know, everything has a different purpose and I can use it at different times during the day. So it's never going to just be like one single thing. Is going to take care of everything. It's just finding different delivery methods. And then even thinking outside of the box, like clear nasal spray, thinking about using that on a regular basis. And I mentioned autoimmune. You tend to get sick more often with autoimmune disorders. So using things to help keep you healthy, really important. That's kind of my...
Do you ever find that your body kind of adjusts to some of your protocols and like you have to kind of shake it up a bit?
Thankfully, no. I think one of the things I battle more recently, and it's probably, I don't know, it's maybe just allergy stuff, but having like a dry throat. So most of patients with dry mouth deal with really bad dry throat, Sjogren's patients especially. And that's trickier.
Is this daytime, like all the time, or is this when you're sleeping? Okay.
Daytime. So that's tricky. It's tricky because it makes your voice really like low and kind of raspy because your throat's so dry. So that's a trickier thing. I do think that's where something like a thicker gel or spray kind of helps, because you are kind of using that and then you're swallowing that also. That tends to help a lot more also. And then just drinking lots of water.
What are they based?
So the all day dry mouth spray. Okay, so it's 44% xylitol. It's also got like a water, it's like a mucoadhesive gel that's there. But yeah, it's going to have that higher xylitol content, but that's just with that gel being in there, it lasts a little bit longer. But it's still not something, I mean, every patient's going to be different with any products as to like how long it lasts. So like the all day spray, sometimes like for me, it might last me 45 minutes to an hour, but I don't produce much saliva at all. Other patients, it might last them a lot longer, but that's our job when we're recommending products to patients, is to educate them on what to expect. We have to give them appropriate expectations, or does it matter what the product is? If they use it once and think that should have lasted them all day long, they're going to tell you that didn't work for me. You have to set the expectation, you know, like, okay, you should expect this is, you know, you're going to use this 3 to 4 times a day, or the Xylemelts, you know, I know how long that's going to last. You just have to set the expectation for the patient.
Well, I've had patients say that they sip water all night because, and they'll wake up, it's disrupting their sleep. And then of course, when they sip water all night, they're getting up and also going to the bathroom. Hydration's important, but that's why the spray has been so well received, because you can keep it on the nightstand. Yeah. You don't have to get up and spit out. and you can spray and have that relief for a few hours. And then, of course, on the go in your purse, you know, they'll have one in their nightstand and one in the purse. And there, it's not having to be near a sink and
right.
not having to, you know, to be able to still have some relief with something really convenient.
Well, and the biggest thing, too, when you're thinking about products, because there's 1,000 things out there, you know, what works for me, someone else might find that something else works better for them because we are all so different. But pH of products is really important, too. You know, knowing the pH of your patient's mouth, knowing the pH of the products we're talking about, that's important. Because if it's an acidic product
right.
and they already have an acidic pH, that could be harmful for them. So it's really important to kind of know that and be aware of that when we're talking to patients about it.
I would assume that there's like a national Sjogren's Association or a group or something.
There
like that.
Is. There's the National Sjogren's Foundation.
Do they work with like dental specifically? Do they have like a resource guide there also or no?
Yes and no. I think that we could do some more work with some of that. Because one thing I get asked a lot is kind of like a Sjogren's informed dental team. Like that's my goal is mm-hmm. to have Sjogren's informed dental teams that includes front desk too. You know what
right.
I mean? Like my whole goal is that we have a dry mouth Sjogren's informed team.
Mm-hmm.
As the foundation, the Sjogren's Foundation grows too, having some sort of directory of someone that's been offices that have been like trained and kind of certified as like Sjogren's, you know, aware dental team or something like that. Because patients that are in other states that are looking for offices that understand Sjogren's and will put them on good prevention protocols, it's not easy to find that kind of stuff. So yeah.
So how do you do that though? How do you get the whole team calibrated?
You tell me. If you tell
you
me how
tell
to do
me.
That.
You're the expert.
it's challenging. I have done a CE for like a study group in Virginia. So I'm based in Virginia. I've done a study group where dentists attended, and that's the start, right? Mm. Because my message is a Sjogren's informed dental team. And I talk about the fact that your front desk should be educated.
Mm.
I had an email from a Sjogren's sufferer. I can't remember what state she was in. It wasn't Virginia. But she was trying to find a new dental office, and she called and asked the front desk. She basically said, I have Sjogren's. You know, basically, like, what do you guys understand? Like, you're kind of interviewing them a little bit because, like I mentioned, these patients have been through a lot dental-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And the front desk person thought she was trying to make an appointment for a child because she had no idea what Sjogren's was. So, like, that's something we have to change because then what happens with that patient? They leave. They don't make a dental appointment. They feel like nobody's going to be able to help them. You know what I mean? So there's just a... I don't know. I don't know how we get the dental informed team on Sjogren's, but I'm trying.
That's your mission, though.
It's my mission.
You're going to be the one to do it.
That's my mission.
Breakthrough. Well, I mean, I feel like it's hard because I feel like, and please do not be offended, but it is a daunting word.
It is.
It makes me, when I see it, think, oh my gosh, this is going to have to be a 20-part lecture series so I can figure out what this is. And it's not that complicated.
Right.
But it also tells the clinicians, like, you're not where you need to be. Like, if you don't know what this is already, like, you need more CE.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, I think any time that we have a patient that wants to talk to us about dry mouth, I mean, I remember when I practiced clinically, too. You've got an hour. There's a lot to get done in that hour.
Mm-hmm.
Dry mouth is something we hear very commonly, just like dry eye that I was reporting for so long. And it's hard to know what to tell them. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know, where to direct them and what to recommend. So it does feel like, oh, we're going down a rabbit hole with this, you know, and it does. But I think it can be simplified. I really do. I think it can be simplified. And I think just raising awareness to the dental team to just say, you know, this is what Sjogren's is. These patients are very high risk. You might want to consider different protocols. Like it can be simplified.
Sure.
It really can be.
Sure.
And I think it can even make the conversation about dry mouth easier and faster with patients.
Yeah.
Well, and we can't diagnose Sjogren's, but we can recognize dental evidence. And so just like with sleep disturbances, we recommend they go and speak to their doctor. And I think that they will because with apnea, they are going to getting those sleep studies done. So if you're noticing something after seeing a patient many times in the dry mouth seems to be, and you're going to see other factors too, like
exactly.
what you're describing with caries and perio, it seems like that would be something that people would go and speak to their physician and say, my dental hygienist mentioned this and thought you could check it out. Cause they may not, they
exactly.
may not realize, be realizing it.
Well, and you know, the thing is too, is like, if you're doing a medical history and like females are, I want to say don't quote me. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I want to say 10 times.
Don't quote you on this international podcast.
Don't quote me on this, but I think I want to say females are like 10 times more likely to have Sjogren's. It's something astronomical. I mean, women are your highest Sjogren's patients. But if you have a patient, especially a female that sits down in your chair and reports that they have multiple sclerosis or RA or lupus, I would talk to them about dry mouth. Do you experience it? Because we know those are the primary autoimmune conditions that Sjogren's is a secondary condition to. So it kind of starts to have that conversation to say, you know, hey, I don't know if you're aware of this. And we can easily have that conversation while we're cleaning. We're notorious for talking while we're cleaning, right? So like we can easily be saying like, you know, I know you've got this. Do you see a rheumatologist for that? Has he ever talked to you about Sjogren's? Do you deal with dry mouth at all? You should keep it on your radar. And then just educate them that they should keep an eye on that.
But yeah, I feel like it's in and out of this loudness thing. So like, we should probably wrap up.
Yep.
You've written a lot. You've done a lot with, you know, raising awareness. If someone wanted to check out some of your work or if they wanted to reach out to you, how can they contact you?
Sure. So you can contact me. The best email address for me is brookcrouchdentalconsulting@gmail.com. And also, you know, I've got some articles on RDH magazine, so you can always just search for RDH magazine and yeah, just reach out to me anytime. I always love connecting with hygienists that are trying to find protocols or different recommendations or understand dry mouth better. It doesn't have to be Sjogren's, but just how to understand that better and how to help their patients. So email me anytime.
Are you open to speaking at groups and stuff too? Or
yes.
Not? Okay.
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, that's the goal, right? That's how we are going to find teams that are, you know, changing and implementing new procedures and protocols. So absolutely always open to speaking to groups.
Make sure you guys all reach out. Yep. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, this is a tale. Oh yeah. A tale of two hygienists. So there might be only one bringing the best of dental knowledge, and we do it all with ease. We cover oral health and screening and preventing gum disease. We're going to do a lot of learning and have a little bit of fun working at the dentist. A tale of two hygienists.
Spirit Airlines? Do you not remember
this?
I don't remember this. Oh, get out.
No, I mean, well, here's the thing. I hate Spirit Airlines.
Well, that's what we were talking about.
And Frontier. But anyways, remind me of this conversation.
So well, you know, it was you, me, Michelle, and Melissa. We did that podcast for Celerant. And somehow we got talking about airlines, and Michelle was talking about how you always get the upgrade
and how
obnoxious it is.
Super obnoxious.
And then somehow we ended up talking about how awful Spirit was.
True.
I mean, and like it really got,
I don't
like
think they have upgrades on Spirit.
They do not. And
you can use the bathroom maybe.
And that's, yeah, that's basically
pay more for the bathroom.
You get water.
So we went down this rabbit hole about it. And so when I was getting ready to come here, I flew American and I was like, oh, I hope it goes well. But it reminded me of last year's podcast.
Hold on. Did American remind you of Spirit? Because American's pretty terrible too. If we're going to be honest about this.
That's why it reminded me.
I took Alaska. It was awesome.
So Alaska's all right. Can I tell you, I've also had bad experiences on Alaska, and everyone from the Pacific Northwest loves it and
love
is like
Alaska.
Super like loyal. Mm-hmm. Their prices are more expensive than other people. It's hard to get an upgrade because everybody freaking flies from there. And I've had really like, it was this, the flight attendant grabbed someone's like overhead duffel or whatever and just like threw it at the passenger and like, this goes under your seat. And that was it under, like, as we're going to under one roof.
Wow.
And then like, it's like,
I haven't had that experience.
Problem upon problem upon problem with Alaska.
Wow.
Well, that's the thing about airlines though, just in general. I feel like if you fly quite a bit, you end up picking the one that does you the least harm.
Sure.
Everyone's going to screw you over eventually at some point, right?
Right. Well, I'm flying American.
Can you tell Mr. Rondon to be quiet?
I'm flying to Phoenix from here for something else, and I'm on American. So hopefully. Okay.
Well, I it was, for the most part, fine, too, but. All right, let's take a selfie.
Okay. Who has long arms?
The podcast has already started. You guys don't want to just take a selfie during our precious recording time?
Oh, no.
No, it's fine.
Well, I can't even
so
get...
So continue on with the airlines thing, though, just to finish this off. United is the best, and that's all there is.
Well,
they're sponsor the show.
Well, I was going to say, now you can see how we got so carried away, because look at what just happened. We were just starting. We like ended up down that rabbit hole. That's the end of my story, is that I thought about our podcast last year when I was flying American, and I thought...
That's cute.
Let's hope all goes well.
So, because you're out of, well, what do you fly out of? Because you're
in Roanoke, Virginia, right? Which is like nothing.
Okay, so well, I mean, do you have options really?
I have Delta if I want to leave like 5 a.m. or American.
Okay, well, Delta is better than American.
Okay. I know.
And then just a last little bit of tidbit, just in case we leave this in the episode, because I don't know if that we actually will, but I will tell you, when you find that precious Alaska or whoever you're going to end up being with, just stick with them.
I know. Yeah.
Just always stick with one. Don't try and get $20 cheaper fares and jump.
Your expectations
status,
have been managed.
Status makes so much sense with only airlines. Status with rental car companies doesn't matter.
True.
Status with hotels, it kind of doesn't really matter either. Like, I mean, what's a bigger room? I mean, it still has a bed in it. I don't know. Just that part drives me crazy. But airlines, like first class, lounge experience, mm-hmm. like all that stuff is so much better.
The Alaska Lounge in Seattle is nice. The new one in the end gates.
Oh,
beautiful.
I bet.
Yeah. I thought of you also when I boarded the plane and walked past everybody in first class with all that room. And I was like, Andrew probably got an upgrade.
Yeah. I mean, I drove here. Thank goodness.
That's right.
Because you're going to move down here, right? Eventually.
I would love to be down here.
That's what my end game is for you. Mm-hmm. And then I will tell you, though, the upgrades have only been about 50% this year.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's happening?
I don't know. I think just more people are flying now. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Okay.